I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Class is in session. What's going on, dudes and ladies? Welcome to the Binary Gamer Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Spears, and we're going to talk, learn, and love some games. I am joined by my bros,
Chris
and Kurt.
And we are going to be hitting up some lost gems this week. This week, we decided that we're going to go way back. Well, some of them are way back, some of them not so way back. And we're going to be talking about games that never were. Games that they either teased us with, and we're like, hey, this is going to be a really cool game, and then it never happened. Or games that just like had little whispers off into the night, maybe an image here or there, and then just vanished like so much vaporware. I think it's going to be a pretty good one because some of these hit pretty close to home. Some of them are games that probably wouldn't have worked out anyway. And then, of course, we're going to end the show with the game is rigged, or at least until we can, that's the name of the game, until we come up with a new name for the game, where my panel of bros are going to have to guess a game based off of some clues. So
you're welcome for that 5-star game title, by the way.
Hey, that's not bad. It's a good working title for now. You know what I mean? It's like Project Dolphin. It's what we're going to work with until we refine and really hammer out this title. So before we get into it, let's catch up with everybody and talk about what we've had going on. So let's start with you, Chris, because I think your recent gaming to-dos have been more entertaining than my own. So Chris, what have you been up to in like the last week? What have you been playing?
Okay, the last week I've played, let's see, probably 6 or 7 games. I played Hearthstone a bunch on the first and second to try to get my rank up a little bit. Got to 15, and then I'm kind of hanging out there until the first set of people get by so that I can start climbing some more, because it's kind of rough on the first day, the second day, because a lot of the people that were in the top 5 ranks are all moved down to around 18, so it makes it extremely difficult to get up to 15. So it's kind of fun, but you don't want to try to get higher than 15 on day 1 or 2 unless you're really, really good, which I'm not. And then I also played some Overwatch this week, and I meant to start Endless Space 2, but I haven't yet. Just the amount of time that it takes to work with, I haven't actually pushed through the anxiety of actually starting that. But I did play some Everspace as well. That game is very fun and very difficult. And then I'm also playing some Terraria again, because of the secret patch that came out last week. Messing with it and trying to figure out some of the stuff that's going on. And I played that a long time ago, but never played it as much as I am now, so it's pretty nice getting to see all the stuff that I never got to see back then.
So, what was the secrets patch supposed to add? Because a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing, because you and I played it last night, a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing is, a lot of it's completely, new to me. I mean, there's a lot that's familiar. I'm familiar with the Crimson and, how hard mode works and stuff like that. A lot of the systems are the same, but then, you show me that slush machine, which that was pretty rad because it just turns random slush into ore. And, the glass kiln and stuff like that, that's new. And then, of course, the yo-yos, which are the most entertaining and probably overpowered weapon in that game right now, because you just throw it out there and just start smacking people around with this yo-yo, Ness style. But
oh
like,
yeah.
Aside from that, just, like, what else is it supposed to add?
I'm not exactly sure. It's kind of difficult for me, at least, to see what the new stuff is because I haven't played in so long that like everything is new, essentially. Hmm. Some of the basic stuff is still there, but yo-yos didn't exist when I played before, and now yo-yos are the strongest weapon in the game. So, I mean, that's a big change. I just got the yo-yo bag now, or today, and it lets you throw two yo-yos at a time, and you get three counterweights. So anytime that your yo-yos hit something, it throws out a small yo-yo that does 66% damage, but it goes the opposite direction as your yo-yo is currently going. So if you throw it out forward, hit a guy, it throws out that one backwards that spins around over you. So, and it does three of those. So you do two forward and three back at the same time. So it covers your back and still hits stuff in the front. It's kind of nuts, but it's really fun.
I was gonna say, because you're throwing out two now with three counterweights apiece, so that's a grand total of eight objects flying around you. Like that's a, yeah, that sounds so broken, dude. I mean, that is pretty bad. So then, okay. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about was with Everspace. So I tried a little bit of Everspace too. Everspace as well. And the thing that I'm seeing with this game is that it's really, really hard to keep yourself supplied with enough nanomachines to keep healing yourself, because I got pretty wrecked in one of the zones, and then I jumped, and then as soon as I jumped into the next zone, I got jumped by like 10 pirates, and somehow they tricked me into going through a minefield, and I got blown up. But like, are you having that same difficulty where, like, it's just really hard to get stuff, like, enough materials to heal yourself?
Yes. healing yourself is extremely difficult. The little nanobots are few and far between. You can get some upgrades to make each nanobot heal for more, so you don't need as many or as often. But what I've kind of gotten to be able to mitigate some of that is upgrading shields as fast as possible, because if you upgrade your shields to the point where they regen faster and they're stronger in general, then you just don't take that much hull damage unless you're really getting overwhelmed.
Okay.
So, and then you can just get your shields back. And like, I had a run where literally when I started the game, there was like six guys on me, and by the time I got out of that first fight with those six guys, I had like 10 hull left out of 600 or whatever. So I had 10 hull left, but I made it through 2.5 sectors after that without one nanobot. So like, you just really have to pay attention to making sure that you have your shields up at any time. Like, if you have to jump away or like boost away and hide behind something to get your shields back, then that's what you have to do. So
okay,
that once I started doing that, it got a little bit easier. I mean, easier is a loose term. The game is still extremely difficult.
Yeah, I was definitely feeling the burn, like, after I hit the second sector. And it was one of those things of, like, I was going through, and I found a new weapon, so I ditched the plasma gun, like your base one. Not the Gatling gun, but the other base one. And then I was using that, and then it was fine. And then I took so much damage that both of my primary weapons didn't work anymore. And I was like, great, I'm just useless now. I'm just running away from everything. And I couldn't mine or anything like that. It was actually, I was like, well, I'm stuck now. And then I don't know. Like, I mean, it's a really cool game, but I think I'd do a lot better if I had some kind of like flight gear, like a joystick or something. Because playing it with mouse and keyboard was very difficult in order to like to map everything.
Try to play it with a controller, man.
I can only imagine.
It's terrible. The problem is, and I've always had this problem, and in my opinion, it's the worst thing about 3D space games is you can't play them with controllers. There's too many axes. You can play them on like a first-person shooter where you move your character with one joystick and you aim with your other joystick. That's fine. The problem with flight sims in space, or even flight sims in general, is you need more axes than just two. To be able to, so you need the keyboard to control some of them, and you can't do that on a joystick. And instead, the only way to rotate, or not rotate, barrel roll, like pitch and roll, the only way to do that is to click in the thumbstick and move it at the same time. Ooh, and then you have to let go of the thumbstick so that you can actually aim. So, man, it was a pain.
I cannot imagine.
And that's the only drawback to the VR that I saw was the VR was fun. I played one game of it, and it was fun. The problem was the controls were just so bad that I just couldn't see myself doing it anymore.
I wonder if you could hook up a flight stick and throttle to your VR. I wonder if that would be possible.
As far as I could tell, as soon as you turn the VR on, it forces you to use a controller.
Oh, man, that's such a shame.
Might kind of be pigeonholed in that game. For sure in Elite Dangerous you can.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's such a missed opportunity because, I mean, that game being the type of game that it is, so, like, for anybody that's not familiar, Everspace is essentially a space sim roguelike. And just the nature of that game with, like, how fast games can go and, like, how, like, quickly you reset just jump back into it. Like, if you could get flight controls on that, it'd be so much fun because you're just like, okay, I'm going to hop in. Boom, I'm going to do two rounds. Okay, I'm done. As opposed to, like, you're really dedicating yourself to, like, a session of Elite Dangerous, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's definitely really cool, and I'm interested in hearing more of what you got to say on it because I think it's a really cool game, but I don't know. Right now, I have so much else going on, I can't really focus on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what about you, Kurt? What have your gaming adventures been like this last week?
I found myself falling into a little bit of a rut, I guess you could say. That's not the right word, but pattern. On the 30th, that was the only day I actually broke from my pattern. I came home, and I did a Final Fantasy VII Midgar speedrun, where it started a brand new game. No bugs, see how quickly I can get through the first whole city of Midgar. And I did it in 2 hours and 5 minutes because I messed up in market.
Ah, the market. Such good memories.
Yeah. I picked the wrong perfume, so I didn't get chosen by Don Corneo.
See, you done messed up, Aaron. Man.
But other than that, it's pretty much been come home, trying to get this new patch series off the ground. And other than that, spend my time. My controller joystick finally is almost completely out, so I can't play Rocket League till I replace it. So let's come home, play either League of Legends, PlayerUnknown Battleground, or start the new season of Overwatch. And for that, I'm kind of waiting for our new buddy to get up to level. He just came over from console to PC. He's enjoying the PC, though, not just Overwatch on it. So it's would like to.
That's good. It's always nice to get new people into the fold. I'm not saying, like, PC Master Race, but, like, when you're bringing new people into, you know, your circle of friends that you game with, that's always really nice when you meet new people and you introduce them to, like, the games you play and, like, your little, you know, circle of you know, buddies, I guess you'd say, that you play with. Because, I don't know, that's one thing that I'm really grateful for is, like, I got you guys, you know, I got Chris, I got Kurt, I got KGB, I got all kinds of people that I play, you know, games with in these different circles and stuff like that. And that's always nice because it's fun to play single player games, but at some point I'm just like, nah, man, I'm just going to play a game with my bros and, like, hang out. You know what I mean? So.
And then we could all go play, like, the online multiplayer platformer, like Trine. I actually really wanted to try that game as a multiplayer game.
I have really bad, like, memories of trying to play The Lost Vikings with two players, and I think Trine would very much be that same experience. And I'd rather avoid having that experience again because I almost lost one of my best friends in the world to the Lost Vikings. Like, we got in, like, a knockout, drag-out fight. It was bad. For the record, though, he is a horrible, horrible Eric the Red. Like, he's like, I like the guy that runs fast. And I'm like, no, dude, you don't know how to jump. And then he would just mess up every time. And then he'd end up dead. And you have to have all three of the Vikings in order to get through a level. And, yeah. Like, it's really irritating when you're trying to beat a game. But so that's
it for me.
Oh, well, I mean, and that's good. At least you're keeping your league reflexes fresh. That's always nice.
Oh, actually, one other one. Every night before I fall asleep, I lay in bed and I play Fire Emblem for about an hour.
Oh. See, I do something similar, but I'm just playing one more brick because I can't stop playing that game. I've been trying not to, but I at least play like probably 10, 15 minutes of it every night before I go to bed. All right, well, so as far as I am concerned with this last week, I've actually had quite a different mix of things. It's been, I've actually gotten a lot more gaming done in the last week than I expected to, which is nice. So obviously playing a lot of PlayerUnknown's, going back and forth on that. That game, that has become the game now where like I do like one or two runs a night and I try and see how far I can get. And it's actually a lot of fun in that format. It's not like one of those games that you have to binge, you know what I mean? Like keep playing round after round after round. Like I can hop in, play a match, play two matches, whatever, and be good for the night. Aside from that, I hop back into Fallout 4, and that game is proving to me yet again that it's probably the best Fallout game. Like I have a soft spot in my heart for 3, but man, Fallout 4 is just, it does so many of the things that Fallout 3 did right, but then just improves on them so much to the fact of where I'm like, man, if they could have taken some of these systems and put them in 3 would actually probably be the best game in the Fallout series, like hands down. Just, you know, if you roll the DLC and stuff together, just, but no, Fallout 4 is definitely holding it down for me right now. Aside from that, playing The Surge a little bit more, just off and on, having fun with that, and have not played much Overwatch, and I feel like my Overwatch skills are deteriorating because I played a match of Overwatch 2 nights ago, and I just got rolled so hard. And I was like, man, I gotta get back into this hardcore again, or I probably just need to step off for a good long while. But I know if I step off, I'm gonna end up just sucking more. So it's a weird mismatch of I wanna play it more, but I also still wanna play more PlayerUnknown's and get better at that. So I think right now my focus is gonna be on PlayerUnknown's to just keep getting better at that. I honestly have a fear that I'm gonna just peter out once I get a win, like once I get my chicken dinner. I'm just afraid that like I'm gonna be like, all right, well I'm done, and just like not play it for a long time. But I don't know, that's one good thing about that game is I can play with you guys, and that's always a lot more fun for me to actually sit down with a group of people as opposed to just by myself. All right, so now that we have our update out of the way, we all have caught up on what we've been playing. I think we can get on into the actual subject. So, who wants to start off? Kurt, you
Chris,
have a...
thank you for volunteering.
Oh, snap. I was going to say, Kurt, you have a pretty good one, but Chris, if you don't mind, you can start us off.
No, that's fine. That's fine. My main game that was discontinued or canceled in recent years, there's been a couple in... like over the years that have bothered me, but the big one that bothered me recently was EverQuest Next. I was really looking forward to it. I played EverQuest 2 a lot. I played EverQuest 1 here and there, but not a lot. But I played EverQuest 2 a lot, like a lot. I was in a top 5 guild before the first expansion. I was in a top 5 worldwide guild, and that was really fun, and I loved the actual difficulty of the MMORPG in comparison to other MMORPGs. It's just extremely difficult, takes forever to level, extremely punishing. There were no indicators when an AoE was coming. You just kind of had to know that it was coming by trying it over and over and over again. So the difficulty was a great factor for me. I was really looking forward to EverQuest Next, and I was hoping they weren't going to mess it up. And SOE was pushing pretty hard for it. Sony Online Entertainment was pushing pretty hard for it. They were working with Daybreak Games, which was at the time part of Sony that was making most of their PC games. Well, a little while ago, I think it was in 2015, I think? 2016? I think it might have been last year, actually. Daybreak Games broke away from Sony Online Entertainment. And when they did that, they canceled most of the games that they were working on, including EverQuest Next, and eventually the other piece to it, Landmark, EverQuest Landmark, which was the other piece to the actual MMORPG that they were working on. And that was really frustrating for me because I was looking forward to that game. A lot of people were looking forward to that game, and actually they already had pre-orders out, so I'm not exactly sure why or how or what they did with the people that had pre-ordered the game. Probably refunded them, I'm sure, because I mean there's not going to be any content. And that was really frustrating for me. And it's kind of giving me, let's see, it's kind of solidifying my feelings that MMOs or MMORPGs are slowly dying. And it's kind of frustrating.
So, like, well, hold on. So, before we get into the actual, like, game itself, why do you feel like MMORPGs are dying off?
Well, I mean, if you look over the last couple of years, okay, so you got WoW, who's 12 years old, right? 12 years old, top MMORPG currently, right? And their numbers don't look great. They're okay, but they're not great. And then you have Final Fantasy 14, which is a pretty solid MMORPG that I just recently started playing. Both of those are pretty good. But the problem is, outside of that, what other MMORPGs are coming out or have came out in the last couple of years that are actually worth it? There was Neverwinter Nights Online, which is okay. There was Guild Wars 2, which is pretty good. And then outside of that, you just have a bunch of games that are free to play, money soaks, that are pay to win or pay to win, pay to have advantage type style games, and they're not what they used to be, and they're not making games the way that they used to. And I feel like, at least me personally, and I know a couple of people that I used to play MMORPGs with passionately, we are all essentially falling out of the loop. We don't like any of the new stuff that's coming out. We don't like much of the stuff that's came out for the last several years. I don't know. It just seems like they're either not making the content that we want, or the content that we want doesn't sell well enough. So nobody, like, so it's just not even being seen.
See, that actually really surprises me because, and I'm not trying to divert from the point of the, you know, the game that we're trying to talk about. I do want you to expand on EverQuest Next in a moment, but I find it odd that there's that dichotomy of, like, people that aren't into, like, really what is the, like, the core foundation of MMORPGs. That just seems really odd to me because, like, I think about the MMOs that you're talking about, like the ones that are, like, free to play, or just they're just money sponges, and, like, all they want you to do is just, you know, they either want a couple whales or they want to just nickel and dime everybody. And those games are, I mean, yes, they're kind of killing the genre, but realistically, the core ones that you're talking about, like, you know, the World of Warcraft, different games like that, those ones are the definition of games as a service, which has kind of become the trend with a lot of games now. So it seems odd to me that those kind of games seem to be dying off in those circles. And I obviously, you know more. You play way more MMORPGs than I do. So, I mean, I take your word for it. But I just find that really, really odd that that's the case. Because if any genre was going to die off, you would think it'd be the free-to-play ones. Like as someone that has played enough free-to-play MMOs and just free-to-play games, period, to understand that I'd rather just pay $30 or pay $50 or whatever that they want just to get, like, a full experience. Like, it just seems odd to me that those kinds of games aren't, you know, doing as well. So, I don't know. That's just really strange. So, tell us more about tell us more about this game, about EverQuest Next.
Well, it was supposed to be a direct, what is it called?
Sequel.
Sequel to EverQuest 2. It was going to continue along essentially the same lines, have the same kind of environment going on. They were going to do Landmark, which they opened up Landmark a long time ago, a couple of years ago, 2013, I think. So you could pay into it, and you would actually get the world generation software that they were using for the current EverQuest game that they were making. And what they were going to do was they were going to incorporate some of the creations in that into the actual game.
Hmm.
So they were letting people use use their artistic license and their, you know, their dream of what the game could be, and they were going to like incorporate that into the game. And I thought that was great, and I mean, I wholeheartedly agreed with that, and I never got into it. However, I thought about it on a lot of occasions, but I ended up not doing it, just because it kind of looked in a very rough state at the current time when I looked. From what I heard, it got a lot better, but by the time I got around to it, they had already canceled Next, and Landmark was still there. I don't know why, and then Landmark was shortly thereafter canceled, because obviously you don't need to create anything if you're not going to move it to something else. So like, there's not even really a reason to mess with it in the first place. I mean, and that's pretty much all we got. I mean, we did get some like trailers and information and screenshots from how the environment was going to look, which was great, and it all looked great. But I mean, it's all gone now. Daybreak just got rid of it, so.
That is a shame. It always pains me to see like an IP or just, you know, a game in general that like people are like really passionate about, especially something like EverQuest that like, I mean, really EverQuest is the foundation of MMORPGs as we understand them now. I mean, a lot of people are going to be like, no, man, it's all about RuneScape, but realistically it's all started with EverQuest. And it just seems like such a shame that something that's that beloved, just one day they're like, nah, man, can't save it, and they just pull the plug, and it's just, you know, it's just gone. It never to be seen again. It's just, it really is such a shame.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so Chris, if you're good, we're gonna move on to Kurt. Kurt, you good?
Yep.
All right, take us away.
See, yours was a game that was in development for a while. It made it to a certain point, and they're just like, no, we can't do this. The one that hits me really close to home is a game that never even came close, but there were still hints of it, and there's been constant hints of something since, and that is the third game in the series for Chrono. And the working title was Chrono Break. A patent was created for it in 2001, and it lasted approximately 2 years before Square pulled the plug on it. And this would have been the sequel to the sequel of Chrono Trigger, and potentially was one that tied Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross together as to why they are two separate worlds that seemingly exist separate. But there's been hints back and forth about the two different games. Essentially, it fell down to politics and the rise of the MMO. A lot of the original Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross team were brought in by Square Enix to work on Final Fantasy XI. In a couple panels throughout the different PAX arcade expos that were run, they actually commented, like, what's going to happen to the Chrono series? And the game director who created Chrono Trigger was on the panel for those. And he's like, I would love to create it. I want to get back into it. But as long as we have the Final Fantasy series that we're working on, it's going to be harder for us to maintain this and still deliver a quality Chrono experience. On top of that, people are getting older. They're less inclined to do work. We could still recruit a bunch of the original talent that worked on the Chrono Trigger series, but we're going to have to bring in a lot of new talent. And eventually, we're going to find ourselves at a point in the game where it's just not Chrono anymore. So they would have to create their own world, create something brand new, and it's so far apart that it would have trouble tying everything together and coming out fluidly. So I'm really sad that this game never got to happen. However, there is a fan-made game that uses the original Chrono Trigger. This game was in production for 4 years. It was a hack of the Chrono Trigger ROM. It was created for computer, and I only mention it because they got, with 4 years in development from this group, they were actually set to release the ROM on May 31st, 2009, when they received an official cease and desist order from Square Enix and stated that if this game was released, we're suing.
Ah, man, that sucks. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
So, they said, okay, we won't release our game, but you can still find the 95% complete ROM out there. So that is currently on my list of things, because talking about all the stuff this week has made me remember I haven't actually played this. And it's the same characters you played as before, Chrono, Marley, Luca. You get to run around the world again, same engine, but it's a completely rewritten story that ties together Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, finds ways that those two things, those two worlds can actually come together. And supposedly one of the things they breach on in the game, which was later confirmed at a panel in 2014, was that multiple parallel universes exist within the Chrono Trigger series. Essentially, when you go back and change something in time, it's like firing a trigger and the timeline's going somewhere, then it hits a wall and deflects in a different direction and creates an alternate timeline. You know, that whole squash a fly in the past, now people have wings in the future kind of deal.
Okay, so that so many different things that the Chrono Trigger universe has introduced to me, and now I realize that parallel universes are one of those things, and this is adding onto the laundry list of crap that game has put into my head over the years. But see, that seems like it would go against the established timeline theory in the game, because in the game you just hop back and forth in the timeline, so like it's a straight line that you're changing as you do things in the past or in the present, or you know, future, whatever. But
kind of,
yeah.
Essentially, with the original Chrono Trigger, though, you start at the furthest point in the future, and then you kind of just continuously go back. And they've got you on this path. You think it's the original timeline, but all these events only really happened because you manipulated them to happen.
Interesting.
At least, like, there's a couple hints that some things you do change, but ultimately it all stays the same. Like when you go and visit Village Medina, I believe it is. The first time you go there, there's a Magus statue in the center of town, which all the monsters are dancing and praising. But then after you go and recruit him from, or not recruit him, but you go fight him in his castle in the 600 AD, you go back to 1000 AD just 400 years later, and all of a sudden it's Ozzy's statue there instead of Magus, who is still and always will be my favorite character in the game.
No way, man. Team Robo all the way.
I have played through the game once with Robo, and that was just so I could say I could. See, my favorite party was always Chrono, Ayla, and Magus.
Now, see, mine was always Magus, Robo, and Marley, because it does the, I think it's called Dark Void. It's a triple tech ability that just wrecks everything, and it's really cool. But regardless, So you said this game is like 95% complete. So was the only thing that was really stopping them the fact that they were planning on like selling it? Like, is that why the cease and desist came out, or was Square Enix just trying to like have them pump the brakes?
There's no statement one way or another that they were going to sell the ROM. I mean, it was a ROM hack. If they were to sell it, it would break copyright. So I believe it was just something where they say, we don't want this in circulation. Because you've potentially touched on ideas we are going to use. Yeah. The cease and desist was in 2009. And at panels in 2011, 2012, and 2014, the lead developer for Chrono Trigger says constantly, I want to revisit this series. I want this to happen. And having that game out, if it created ideas that he was going to touch on the news, it would just kind of tear his world apart if he had to redesign a storyline.
What is the name? See, now you got me thinking of these like fan-made games, like that one. And there's a Pokemon one recently. I think it was called...
Oh, it's a Pokemon Uranium.
That's what it was, Pokemon Uranium. And that guy got shut down too, and that game apparently was...
That game was like completed too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a copy of it on my computer right now.
So do I.
Yeah, I actually never got a chance to give it a shot, but I was told that just the new mechanics that the person that made it like put in were really, really cool. And then Nintendo and the Pokemon company were like, nope, we need you to stop, because this is kind of the most sacred treasure in video games.
I think it just adds one whole type of Pokemon called Nuclear, which has several different other ones. So you can be like Nuclear Fire, Nuclear Poison, Nuclear whatever.
It can never be its own main type, though. Like, there's no nuclear-based Pokemon. But you could have like a nuclear Charmander who, instead of being, or let's use Charizard because that's a better example, instead of being fire and flying, he would now be fire and nuclear.
Huh, interesting.
So the nuclear would essentially just replace their subtype. But I'm wondering if they possibly put a hold on that, because they kind of did something similar to that with the release of Sun and Moon, where when you're in the tropical islands, they have a bunch of Pokemon that they revisited. And they just gave them like slightly altered properties. Like, you can catch a black Rattata or Rattata, whatever you want to call it.
I always call that a Rattata. But see, like with Sun and Moon, they just had like further evolutions or just variations on evolutions with a lot of like the original 151. So, I mean, it might be kind of a stretch to say that they like took stuff from that, you know, from Pokemon Uranium, but I don't know. And see, this is like what I'm talking about with these fan-made games, where it's like, it's these things that they start working on it, and it gets fleshed out and becomes really this, like, this thing in and of itself, kind of away from the original idea that it was going for. Like, the Chrono Trigger game that you're talking about, it makes sense that they stepped in because they're trying to do a continuation of the story, but... With like Pokemon Uranium, this guy's just trying to put his own spin on Pokemon. Right. I mean, to say that, you know, like games aren't influenced by other games is like saying that art isn't influenced by other art. Of course, other games influence other games. Now, this guy, because if I'm not mistaken, Pokemon Uranium was like, that was done by one person, right? Same thing as like Stardew Valley, just like one guy working away.
I think it was a small team. It was 1 to 3 people somewhere in there, but yeah, definitely okay. Really small.
So let's say on the high side of that estimate, you have 3 people, and they're working away at this idea. They're like, hey, what if you put this different subtype into Pokemon to kind of like balance things in this way, so on and so forth, and they're spitballing ideas around. They may have the basics of how they want to program that in, but they don't have the means or the resources to go through and like design an entire game. So you work off of the framework and the skeleton of something that already exists, because that's the thing that inspires you. And it kind of bothers me sometimes when the game companies, and I understand why they do. I understand that Nintendo and the Pokemon company have to protect their IP, because if they don't, then it gives everybody the keys to the castle and people can just walk in and be like, well, you let this guy use it, so we're going to use it. And we're going to put Pokemon in Fallout. And then it's the best thing ever, but whatever. So I understand why they did it, but like sometimes it hurts when like you see stuff like that where it's this labor of love and you can tell this person put a lot of work into it, or these people put a lot of work into it, and then, you know, the big bad companies, as they're seen in a lot of ways, come through and they're just like, no, when they just, you know, slam down the gavel and they're like, no, like, you can't, enough with your fun, you're done, let's go home, I'm taking your ball.
So basically, we don't need another EA.
Pretty much. So do you have anything else to add about your missing link in the Chrono Trigger trilogy?
I kind of like how there's a missing link, though, especially in a game that deals with parallel universes. It allows people to draw their own conclusions to it.
Yeah.
So the original game that was supposed to be released is Chrono Break. And then the remake that was the fan-made one, they actually call it Chrono Trigger Crimson Echoes. Huh. So they're not calling it their own game. They're calling it a continuation of Chrono Trigger that could potentially link some of the starting events that ripple into effect in Chrono Cross.
That is the most edgelord name I've ever heard, ever.
Okay, but it was started in like 2004. Like, that was in the rise of the edgelord. That was back when putting three X's in your name meant you were good at games.
Oh, God. Yeah. Man, sometimes I remember the early days of the internet, and I'm just like, oh, God. I picked so many dumb names for, like, different online aliases and stuff like that. Like, for the longest time, I can probably put this out there now because it's not going to matter, but when I played Diablo 1 online, my name on there was just Spearboy. That was it. Just, my last name with boy at the end of it, and I thought I was the coolest guy ever.
And then, that sounds like a name you would give to an erotic dancer now.
That's not quite where I saw that going, but I can see where you're going with it.
I'm not going there anymore.
Nope, not to that corner. All right, so, Kurt, if you're good, I'm going to head into mine. But before we do, we're going to take ourselves a quick break, and we will be right back with probably one of the more famous games that never was.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
All right. The break has been had. We did some talking, some conversing. They tried to get the answers for the game is rigged from me. I did not budge, but we are back. All right, so
he's got two shivs in his back, and he still won't budge.
He's resilient, I tell you. All right, so we're going to get into the last of the games that never were. And, I mean, obviously there's a long laundry list of games that we wish had come around, but this is the one that I think is kind of one of the biggest upsets when it comes to this. So I am, of course, talking about StarCraft Ghost. And this game is kind of a tragedy in its own right, because when I was doing like research and stuff like that and looking at like not just the development history of it and everything, but also like a lot of the assets that have kind of been put out there over the years since it was canceled and like what there actually was, it's really sad because it looked really good. Like, it really had that Blizzard polish to like the cinematics and stuff like that. Like, the opening cinematic is really cool, but unfortunately it never saw the light of day. So this game was announced Blizzard announced it on September 20th in 2002, and it was originally supposed to come out for the original Xbox, PS2, and the GameCube, like, series of consoles. Supposed to be released in 2003, like the late part of 2003, and everybody was like, oh my god, this is amazing, it's like, you know, a deeper dive into the StarCraft universe, which at that point in time, StarCraft was still pretty big. So time goes on, and later on in the third quarter of 2004, the actual development company was, well, okay, so Blizzard was developing it, but they were working on it with Nihilistic Software. So Nihilistic finished what they had done, and then Blizzard pulled it back, and they went on to do a little more collaboration with Swingin' Ape Studios, which I had never heard of until I started doing this research in 2004. Then they bought that company in 2005, bunch of stuff. And then they went on to keep like teasing this game. And then in 2005 at E3, they officially like re-announced it. They're like, hey everybody, remember StarCraft Ghost? This game is super cool. Hey, it's still going to be happening. But they had decided to push it back to be a part of what is considered the seventh generation of consoles, which, for those that don't know, well, actually, I want to see if you guys know. Do you know what consoles fell into the seventh generation of consoles?
That was the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, and GameCube?
Nope, the Wii. You're close. 2 out of 3. Not bad. But yeah, so they were going to push it back an entire console generation, which probably would have done really good for the game, because though I don't know how well it would have looked on Wii, but for going over to the 360 and the PS3, what's that?
I don't think it would have gone to the Wii.
I mean, they had it slotted for the GameCube, which I found that to be really, really interesting in and of itself. But the GameCube had a lot of really cool games. Like, the GameCube definitely did a lot of really cool things, but that's a tale for another time.
I mean, just because it's...
Well, I mean, in the game, the GameCube was an actual full-power console for that time. Generation 7 and Generation 8, like, the Nintendo consoles decided to go a different route. That's why they don't have the same games. They don't have the power that the other ones do.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, people look at the Wii as like a technological advancement from the GameCube, when in reality it was a horsepower downgrade in so many ways. But like I said, that's a tale for another time. So it was going to be shifted over to the Xbox 360 and the PS3, that generation of consoles. And it just got stuck in this like loop of development hell where, you know, people would be checking in on it and it's like, hey, it's coming along, guys. And they made cinematics for it. There were cutscenes put out and stuff like that. Like, people were seeing stuff from it and just nothing came about it. And so then finally it had just gone on for so long that it eventually just became vaporware. And it was one of those things of like, people had seen parts of it. Some people had actually sat down and played it, and it just never came to be. And it's really, really sad, because it really bums me out, because it's one of those few times where Blizzard, you know, let people down. Blizzard is one of those companies that is revered because when they talk about something as a concept for a game, and then you start to see the cycle of, you know, like, this is some of the images, and this is, you know, gameplay, and, you know, hey, here's a beta, here's some cinematic, stuff like that. 9 times out of 10, they're going to deliver, and usually what they deliver is really, really good. But with this, they had everybody's hopes up for this really cool third-person experience of, you know, being really boots on the ground when it came to the StarCraft universe, and it just never came to be. And that's, I don't know, to me that's just such a shame, because there were really cool characters. So you were gonna play as a ghost named Nova, who was designed strictly for this game. Nova was supposed to be just this ridiculous badass, where you were gonna be going through and figuring out this like really shadowy conspiracy going on in the Terran Dominion, and a lot of like over the shoulder third person action, a lot of stealth elements, different weapons and stuff like that. You're gonna have like psionic powers, because the ghost, like these like covert operatives in the StarCraft universe, have like some form of like higher like a lot of them have like ESP or just like straight up like psychic powers. Some of them, like, that's how they stealth themselves, is actually like changing your perception, as opposed to like using stealth technology and stuff like that. A lot of different variations on how psionics work in StarCraft, but for the most part, they're, you know, that just makes them badasses. And you're gonna be going through and like going through this like really shadowy plot of like what's going on behind the scenes in the Terran Dominion. But what really stood out to me was the fact that the multiplayer seemed like it was gonna be really, really diverse, where you were going to be playing on, like, it was essentially, like, two separate teams, and they were going to have Deathmatch, Capture the Flag, and then essentially King of the Hill, and, like, you know, different named, but variations of that. And you could play as either light infantry, like, a straight-up Marine, like you see in, you know, normal StarCraft, a Firebat, or a Ghost. So this real different type of gameplay, depending upon these classes. And as far as I'm concerned, one of the earlier games to use such varied classes when it came to the gameplay. Actually, no, now that I'm thinking about it, Return to Castle Wolfenstein had gameplay like that, where there were different classes that you would play just in multiplayer, as opposed to, you know, just being, you know, just the protagonist in the single player. But then what they had was two very different game types that sounded really cool. So the first one was called Mobile Conflict. So there's two teams that are fighting control of a single Terran military factory, and it's flying up in the air. So as you advance on the spot where you want it to, like where you want it to go, where it has to land, both teams are pushing back and forth, and then you have to board it and then get it over to the capture point, set it down on the capture point, and then hold the capture point with the factory in place for a certain amount of time to win. So it kind of made it like a mobile, not really capture the flag. I'm thinking like a form of like control point, but not quite King of the Hill because the hill is moving. Then there was another one that was called Invasion, which you were just fighting for control of like different resource nodes, and then essentially you're capturing different nodes as it goes on. So kind of like Conquest in the Battlefield series of games. And then obviously as you get more points going through the Invasion mode, you get to purchase different vehicles and stuff like that. Different classes can use vehicles, so on and so forth. But this game had a lot going for it, aside from just the single-player campaign, which was really well fleshed out, and in my opinion, had a really cool plot. But also was going to bring a really cool form of multiplayer that, man, I mean, I'm telling you, it really was like ahead of its time in the way that it was thinking, especially using such a sacred IP such as, you know, StarCraft. So it's one of those games that so many people looked forward to, and then, you know, 2006 comes around and it's just it's gone, no more, bye. Just makes me really sad.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like PlanetSide.
Yeah, like very much in the way that the multiplayer is set up, for sure. But like I said, it's one of those games that was just stuck in this like infinite dev cycle that, you know, everyone thought was eventually going to end, and then the game would get released, and then they just pulled the plug on it. But then you have examples like we were talking earlier of games that were in development hell and then actually came out, such as like Duke Nukem Forever, and like that game. I would sacrifice that game in an instant to get StarCraft Ghost, but instead we got Duke Nukem being Duke Nukem, and the world didn't need more of that. Like,
no, I will openly admit I am a Blizzard fanboy, and apparently from what they said is from a gameplay perspective, it didn't live up to their potential. And if they had released this, Blizzard could have potentially tanked as a company hard. Because what would have come next in their big series of launches was Diablo 3. To date, Diablo 3 has been their most cataclysmically bad launches of any vanilla game that they have launched. They have made tons of redemption for it with Reaper of Souls and all the expansions they made for it. But they deemed Diablo 3 to be a great enough game. Oh, and it received so much hate.
See, I never understood what the problem with Diablo 3 was. Like, when I played it, and mind you, I played it on console. Like, I...
Oh, well, then you played it way after, though.
Yeah,
like... We're talking about the release, dude. Because the release for the console was, like, 5 months later or something like that.
5 years?
The release later. On... Or maybe years later, yeah. But the release on console was terrible, dude. The game was unplayable for, like, a week.
There was a constant login error for the first 4 hours that we tried to get the game. And I went with some buddies. We got all the stuff ready. We were going to stay up all night. We had a 4-man party ready to go. And it was just error getting in. Server crashed. And Diablo 2 generated so much hype for the game. And then it was just so buggy and unbalanced. The original people who first beat the game all the way through were using 4 monks. Because there was an ability on a 3-second cool. It was a 12-second cooldown, and it lasted for 4 seconds, and it gave everyone in your party CC and damage immunity for 4 seconds. So you were essentially just stacking that buff 100% uptime. And you just have one person nuke everything.
Well, and there was the market system. The market system was terrible.
Oh, the real money auction house?
Yeah.
I made terrible. My money back from that game off that.
Wow, yeah, I didn't even realize. I apologize that, yeah, the game came out like a year and some change later on on console. So yeah,
that game was flushed out by then.
Yeah,
like Diablo 3 was fine as long as you didn't play it like the first month.
Shame. But yeah,
the original Inferno mode, I can happily say I did beat it. When you would have to walk into an area and all of a sudden, look, there's an elite pack, and it literally has 12 different battle mechanics I have to worry about. You think Frozen Jailer Orbiter is bad now? Include Jailer, every Desecrator, Molten, Fast, Chain, or Fire Chains, Lifelink, Juggernaut, all of those stacked on top of each other. Inferno had 10 different buffs to elite mobs.
Well, I mean, getting back to Ghost, though, just to wrap this up, you might be right that it's one of those things that they decided to pull the plug because they felt like it wasn't going to live up to, you know, the Blizzard standard, which, to be perfectly honest, is a high bar. But it's one of those things where I kind of almost wish they had taken the chance just to see. You know what I mean? Like, this game has so much potential, and it really just seems a shame that they didn't even give it a chance to get off the runway, you know?
They definitely started with a great concept for it. And they actually built so much hype with this game. They created the graphic novel series. Was it a graphic novel or was it just a regular novel?
There was one book that was based off of it.
StarCraft Ghost Nova.
Yeah.
And they actually go in depth to explore like how they get the psychic powers, and it's some dark underground plot by the humans to try and make humans stronger against everyone else in the world. It's a very shady, evil way of doing it.
Yeah.
And they introduced one of the most popular StarCraft characters ever, which is Nova. And she is the only character in Heroes of the Storm that has not appeared in a single Blizzard game.
Huh. I didn't know that. But yep, I think it definitely, this whole list of games that we have talked about definitely speaks to like a lot of potential that never came about, and especially in the instance of like, you know, Crimson Echoes, the Chrono Trigger fan-made game, of just like people's passion not being able to be fulfilled, and that's almost sadder in a way. I don't know, guys, it just, like, this is actually kind of like a depressing topic. I didn't realize this would get so sad, because now that I'm, you know, listening to, you know, Chris talk about EverQuest next, and I'm sitting here, you know, talking about StarCraft Ghost, I'm like, man, it's just so many good games that we didn't get to play. It kind of bums me out, you know? But so, I think, without further ado, we can move on to the game, or as Kurt likes to call it, the game is rigged.
Maybe if you gave us a chance of winning...
The game is not actually rigged. So, you guys just... And for the record, you guys took one stab. Like, just one. And you didn't, you know... It didn't pan out for you.
Well, I mean, I knew the game. I just don't remember the name because it was old as hell.
Well, I mean... Okay, well, good news. This game's not as old as hell. So...
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that's clue number one. I'm going to take my first guess at this. And it is... Prey, the sequel to Prey 2, the game that was never created.
Nope.
Okay, well.
All right, well, we're not actually going to count that as your first guess. So real quick, I'm explaining the rules. So the rules are simple. I have picked a game that the guys are going to guess. The way it works is I'm going to give them a clue. After every clue, they are going to guess the game. After the fifth clue, they get one last guess. And if they make it, then good. And they win. And if they don't, then they lose. So you guys get 5 clues and 5 guesses, and that is it. Are you guys ready to play the game?
Is rigged.
Yep.
The game in the background is rigged. All right, so to start off, this game is a side-scrolling platformer developed by Konami for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
That's all you're giving us?
That's the first clue.
Okay.
You know what? I'll even expand. It came out...
Nope. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and make a guess at this.
All right.
And I might be off of my generation because I don't know which system this was originally released for, but I'm going to go with Contra.
Nope. All right, Chris, do you want to take a stab?
Castlevania.
Nope. Alrighty, next clue. This game has you trying to save the day from the main protagonist named Axel Gear.
I've definitely played this game.
You probably have.
Oh, I can't remember it right now. Axel Gear.
Come on, you gotta guess, guys.
I don't know.
Chris, you got anything?
Oh, man. I feel like I've played it before.
See, Chris actually has an unfair advantage because him and I grew up together, so... He's probably
Paper Mario.
He's probably
I'm just looking for the next clue.
Right, I'm gonna guess Sunset Striders.
Ooh, no, see, that's actually one of my all-time favorites, but that is not the game in question. Also, I don't think developed by Konami, but I could be wrong. All right, so your next clue is the main character is armed with a sword and gets around with a jetpack.
Maybe I haven't played this game. I mean, the only time I can think of ever using a jetpack and a sword was Halo Reach.
That's... Wow. You need to play more games, man.
Do you want me to guess? I think I know it.
Tell you a guess.
Rocket Knight.
Come on, there's one more word in there. You almost got it. For full credit, what is the full name of the game?
Rocket Knight Adventures.
You are correct, sir.
Is it really Adventures?
Yeah.
Man, I just guessed that. Like, nice. Blue.
So just to let you guys know, technically, Chris named off the Sega Genesis version. I'm going to give you guys credit, though, because the way that this work, the way the timeline works for Sparkster is a little different. So it originally started with the first game in 1993 that was just called Rocket Knight Adventures. Then the sequel came out on the Sega Genesis and on the Super Nintendo as well, but on the Super Nintendo it was called Sparkster, the Rocket Knight Adventures 2. On the Sega it was just called Rocket Knight Adventures 2. So that's the main difference, but it's okay. I'm gonna give it to you anyway. So you guys won the game.
Game is so rigged. I didn't win. Those are Chris's points.
Well, I mean, you guys are a team.
I thought we were competing against each other.
No, crazy, you're trying to beat me. That's how the game works.
I was trying to beat everyone.
Oh my gosh,
Chris. Well, we won.
Yes, you guys won.
Great. Way to go, us. Although I kind of feel like the first loser now.
But no, this game actually holds a special place in my heart, which I don't know if you guys have noticed the trend, but I started out with two games that are very near and dear to my heart. I'm going to make it a little more difficult later on when I start getting more, you know, current games, but I'm still going to, you know, keep you guys guessing until we get there. All right. So that
Are I you think, sure that it was originally designed for the Super NES?
Yes, well the game came out on the Genesis, but also came out on the Super Nintendo as well. The first game was only on the Genesis. So if you look it up, Rocket Knight Adventures came out September 3rd, 1993. Then if you look at... Where is it at? I have it up here. If you look at Rocket Knight... Sparkster Rocket Knight Adventures 2... came out on the Sega Genesis February 22nd, 1994, and came out on the Super Nintendo October of 94.
Okay, so there were two on Sega first.
Yeah, well, no, the like Sparkster, the second Rocket Knight game, came out on the Genesis as well a year later. The first Rocket Knight game, Rocket Knight Adventures, only came out on the Genesis. But the second game, I guess you could call it a cross-platform game, like an early cross-platform game. Though there were variations. Like in the Sega version, you could get Gold Sparkster. So like if you collected these certain collectibles, I think they were swords, you could be like essentially supersonic, like getting the Chaos Emeralds, but it was different. But it was only in the last level, as opposed to on the Super Nintendo, the Gold Sparkster mechanic wasn't there. So like there were slight differences, but I liked the Super Nintendo one better because I like the sound better. Like it plays slightly different, and there's better music in the first one, but that's just me. All right, so with that, I think we are good to wrap up. What do you guys think?
Sounds good.
All right, so
I've got nothing left to add, unfortunately.
Thank you guys very much for listening to the Binary Gamer Podcast. Remember, we are a weekly podcast over on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, all the places you can get podcasts, you can find the Binary Gamer Podcast. Remember also to head over to YouTube, check out Binary Gamer, watch all of our awesome videos, check out our Let's Plays, our streams that the guys do all the effing time. Like, these guys are streaming constantly, so you can always check us out over on YouTube Gaming, over on Twitch. You can check us out over there whenever we're streaming. Go ahead and follow us and like us over there on Twitch and find out whenever we go live so you guys can be a part of the awesome. We play everything from PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds to, I mean, Chris was streaming Final Fantasy 14 for a while there. It was, we stream a little bit of everything. So if you guys want to see a bunch of guys just rant and rave about how awesome these games are, head over there and watch us on Twitch. And of course, be on the lookout for Kurt's new series called The Patch Notes, where he's going to be giving you guys like the biggest updates on big changes in the games that you love. Everything from, like I said, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds to Terraria, all the stuff that gets updated over on Steam or even on console. If he can find the information for you, he's going to let you guys know. And that is going to do it. Oh, and of course, you can find myself, Tony Spears, over on Twitter at iFlipOfTheSwitch. All one word, exactly as it sounds, iFlipOfTheSwitch. And actually, you know what? Head over there and give us suggestions for a name to the game, because I don't think we can keep it The Game Is Rigged forever. Unfortunately, I don't think that's not going to play out 20 episodes from now when Kurt is still telling me that the game is rigged, but who knows?
After I win one, maybe we'll change it.
Once Kurt wins, the game is no longer rigged. All right, so that's going to do it. Thank you guys very much for listening. Have an awesome day. Go play some games, fools.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.